Paul, for what you can you give us a bit of insight as to how this day has gone for you and your coaching staff so far with meeting with your guys?
Well, it's there's four meetings that go on. The medical first that kind of details where the injuries are at and what the rehab program is going forward. Strength and conditioning, just a review of testing from last year, areas of improvement. I'll meet with all the players, and they'll all meet with Kevin after, and then they're gone.
Overall, from some of the meetings that you've had today, what kind of a vibe are you getting back from your players?
Well, everybody's got that. It's tough. A couple days after you lose a playoff series, it's a tough day, and then you go through your list of guys, and there's a long list that either had career seasons or your message is same as last summer because you did good work and you've made good progress as a player, and there'll be other guys that need an adjustment with their summer program, and then that you're looking for more from them next year. But in that group, there's a whole bunch of people that you would expect them to be better based on their age. They're going to get a year under their belt and another summer under their belt and be better players.
Blake and a couple of the other players had said that they thought maybe even when the team was winning games earlier, they never really kind of got off the ground or got to where they wanted to be. Is that how it feels to you?
Yeah, the piece to our game that I don't think ever came together the way we wanted it to is the defensive side of our game. And we had lots of guys that put up big numbers and had good offensive years, but our defensive game I don't think was as good as it needed to get to over the course of the year.
When we asked the guys, what they think went wrong, a lot of them are saying, if we had the answer or if we had those answers, we'd still be playing right now. How far along are you in finding the answers for what may have gone wrong, and how much of a process is this summer going to be in digging into that?
So if it's right, you're holding the Stanley Cup, right? Well, there'll be 30 teams with questions about how it ended. We're on that path of developing a real good, strong team. And I think I feel better about our play in the St. Louis series than I did in the Vegas series from last year. I mean, that was a hard grinder, 4-1 goal games that we lost. It was tight. They're a real good team. So it's one goal that we've got to find a way to manufacture, and I don't think it's on the offensive side of the game. I think we felt good and excited about our season coming in, and we were skewed to an offensive game, but not so far off that we weren't defending in blocks well. But at the end of it, when you look at it, is we weren't quite a good enough defensive group this year. From, I don't know if that's start to finish, but it wasn't a strength. And I felt last year it was the quiet strength of our team. Nobody talked about because lots of people are scoring goals and we're feeling good about it. But I thought our dirty little secret in Winnipeg is we were a much better defensive team than people knew when they played us. I think that changed the way some people play this year. We hit a lot more defensive-minded teams that didn't come in to play the Winnipeg Jets. They came in to defend against the Winnipeg Jets, and we're in a process of struggling with that a little bit this year, of getting used to being checked as hard as we got checked. So we struggled with that a bit, but I don't feel that what went wrong. We were in a group of 16 teams that. I don't know that anybody loved their matchup in the playoffs. You know, there are good teams here, well-balanced, as you can see by the number of coaches that like their team that are having this conversation today. So let's just continue to get better.
You talked about the defensive side of things. Is that maybe, and you talked about the fact that a number of players had career years when it comes to offensive numbers. Is that maybe an explanation of why that happened, why so many people on this team were able to have career years, but it didn't turn out the way you wanted it to defensively?
I don't think that, no, there wasn't an overt cheat in the game to offense. right? I think an awareness of that being just as important to the offensive part of the game. I'm going to be honest with you, Sean. Our offensive game was different looking this year in terms of style. It was fairly removed from the offensive game that got played in the last month and a half. Like, the game changes to a playoff style. We put up 27 goals in a 5-game block in December and figured that's the way it should be if we just play our game. Well, that's not the way the game's played, and we struggled with that a bit.
So, Paul, on the defensive side, when you look at the potential makeup of your roster going forward, the blue line might be the area that's in the most flux, in that you've got two of your top six guys are pending UFAs in Ben Schrott, Tyler Myers. Obviously, the Jacob Trouba situation is with an RFA, and who knows where that goes. But how do you then – is there concern that you can get back to where you need to be defensively, especially with a lot of potential turnover?
Yeah, it's – frame it a little different way. I mean, I'll give you an example. Do you remember the play where Wheeler just about beat Tarasenko wide on the stretch in game six? That's a real good player playing defense, right? So we get to the trade deadline with the second youngest forward group. Learning how to defend and grind and be patient in your game comes with some experience and some age. It's still a real young group, and they come into this league as gifted offensive players. And it takes a little while, right, for them to learn that and grind at it. I think that there's some area for growth there. Who comes back on that back end and how it all gets structured? I'm talking about more of a team thing than I am an individual thing where we need – I'm not saying we need more stay-at-home defensemen or we got to get rid of our skill to grind the game out. We just got to take a skilled group and move them along their development so that they're really good at both ends.
Coming into this season, there was this widespread belief that the window is as open as it's ever going to be for the Winnipeg Jets in this season. All these guys on their ELCs coming off what you had accomplished last season. Do you subscribe to the theory that the window, not closed, but that this is as open as it was going to get?
No. There are just too many young players that are just going to get better here, right? There's too many guys between the 20 and 26 range that aren't at their peak or at their best. So, no, I don't feel that. I mean, our team's going to change. Clearly, the cap's going to affect that. But those players that are coming back, I think, have lots of room to improve.
And last one from me, but obviously we made a big deal out of the closed-door meeting. Blake and others said that's the normal – those things happen in the course of a season. Do you have any concerns about just the state of the room going forward from this season and the ability, I guess, for everybody to pull in the same direction?
No, I got no problem with the idea that reporting it, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on that you don't know. First of all, we might have had twice as many closed-door meetings last year. You just didn't schedule them right after a game, after a loss you didn't like. And boy, you're a lot more worried when you're coaching a team and they aren't having any. Like, you got to have two or three a year, right? And you need a couple of dust-ups, usually on the ice. I mean, we had a way better one last year on the ice with Benny and Wheels. Really solid one with St. Louis this year. I don't know if you've seen that one, a really good one on the ice. This is a competitive, snarling sport when it's played right, and you need a bit of that.
What's the top priority for the coaching staff, Paul, going to the off season? The last few have been pretty easy to identify. Is it any more challenging this year?
No. So the way it works is we'll probably grind out the rest of the playoffs. We'll go through all the analytics and video, but that's an ongoing process. So by the time you get to the end of the year, you're not starting at the start and taking a bigger picture. You've been grinding on those and have a pretty good idea of where your hockey team needs to get better. And then you'll spend the summer trying to, once you get your schedule for training camp, making sure that you're hitting on those most important things. But most of this is a continuation of development, really. It's a you've got to I like parts of the way we play and parts of the style of game that we play. The parts that I don't like, I believe we can fix, we can get better. It takes some time and some repetition in our game. I mean, how do you sell something that nobody's going to believe? But we got into the playoffs last year and beat a team that wasn't as good as the St. Louis Blues in the first round. And then we got into a fantastic seven-game series and played very well in beating Nashville. But not so much better than we played in that St. Louis series. There's big stretches of that St. Larry series that was the best hockey that we played all year, and it had to be. So you'd have to watch them play and know their last 3 or 4 months to have the respect for that team that I would have had going into that series. The loss on hockey wasn't as painful as the loss to Vegas on hockey.
Paul, do you, talking about the coaching staff and stuff like that, I mean, in terms of your evaluation of your assistant coaches, do you look at that at some point? I mean, you talk about the defensive structure.
Here's what I'm going to do for you. If all the coaches that lose that have this meeting after the first round get fired, I'll resign and take my staff with me. How about that? So that's how I feel about him.
Patrick was in here talking about just an ongoing back issue that he's had. Is that a concern? I mean, do you look at that just as a young
man? Not in the idea that you, like, if you expand out on the idea that he's got a, this is not a degenerative back issue, that he's not going to be able to play in 2 years. So I got, at any given time, 13, 14 guys during a regular season that are dealing with something. He's had a reoccurring back problem. It was the reason that he took morning skates off early in the series. But he had a groin pull in game 5 that was the bigger issue. That was the issue for game 6, whether he was going to be able to play or not. So those were completely unrelated events. Am I worried about it? Yeah, if it gets worse. But I can no more than the other 14 guys that have something that, you know, if it got worse, it could be a real problem. So that's part of the maintenance. It's part of, as these guys get older, they develop a program for their bodies that's unique to them that they do every day.
Paul, what was the biggest challenge for you this season as head coach of this group?
Managing the expectations of our team. So we're, I don't know, 33-16-2 after, towards the end of January. And I know when I look at that number, that looks good and we're going to go on this run, except I know that our game's got a long way it needs to go. So handling that. And you've got, again, you got guys with good numbers in career years that are feeling good and people are all jacked up. But I know this whole thing is tighter in on our side and in the Western Conference, that we still have a lot of work to do with our group. And I don't know that any team gets to that level of expectation that we had here, except for very possibly Tampa this year.
Can it be a challenge when you have so many players that are set to be restricted or unrestricted free agents? Well, just trying to manage everything, because obviously a number of guys have vested interests.
Yes, is the honest answer. When you get a big number like that of guys that are up, you know, players get paid on two things. They get paid on points and they get paid on ice time. I mean, that's where the numbers define what a guy makes, where a defensive player who plays real hard and plays every night, it's at a bit of a disadvantage for a guy that scores 5 more goals. So there's a challenge that comes to that, fitting all those. But more, the bigger challenge ties that to youth as well, because you're two hard things to do in this league. One is win, and we all know how hard that is, and the other is develop a younger team, and throw the two of them together, it can be a challenge at times.
Paul, you've brought this up already twice today, and Blake Wheeler brought it up without being asked earlier today, too, about the youth and the age of your lineup. So there are metrics on this. Like at the trade deadline, you had the youngest overall. On that day, you had the youngest overall roster. And there's another site that monitors age by ice time distribution, and you are the youngest team in the playoffs. So what's the challenge for you specifically and this team to develop a winning team with a young team?
Just that. So good, skilled young players that have been put in a position that they've been able to produce. And so much of what you see in playoff hockey is it part of an experience that's almost new to them, right? That level in playoffs isn't like anything close to the regular season. So over time, they get that, right? So then you start seeing teams start to play playoff hockey in the regular season a little bit more. And I think that you saw St. Louis do that. I think you've seen Dallas do that, especially on our side. Possibly Boston. Certainly the Islanders, a more veteran group over there, have found a way to do that. Like, I'm just as excited about this team, maybe more so heading into next year than I was this year. And I was aware of the age that we took out. So we come off a big run at the end of the season, and we have an outstanding hockey series against Nashville, so everybody's jacked, and then we got younger. And rightfully so, right? You're trying to build something, and these guys need, but with that comes the challenges, just the inexperience. So when you're that young in this league, you're developing at the same time that you're winning, right? So I can play some of these younger kids more and give them more minutes, but you got to win some hockey games too. So you need Lowry's line to take some minutes against the other team's best, so you can get your next group of young, skilled guys out against maybe their third pairing and get an advantage that way. But man, none of their agents like the minutes on the clock. But so there's a challenge there. But it was fun. Like, it's not, you know, going back to Sean's question, it's not what went wrong. I don't feel that with it, that it's part of the process of getting better and building and getting stronger.
In training camp, you said something that has
resonated. You're pulling it out of training camp?
No, but it's just something you said about expectations. You just alluded to it actually again here. I don't want to misquote you, but to paraphrase, you said something about, you know, we're coming into a season where the fans expect us to win every game 5-1. I believe that those are the numbers you quoted. So
yeah, I don't even know if they're going to forgive you for the one, but.
Well, there you go. So what role did those expectations, I'm sure you had some within the team, yeah, but the expectations were high. What role did those have in your season, and how do you think you cope with
them? So I think that the bigger challenge was the expectations in our room, right? Where like we ran in December, where we scored 27 goals in 5 games, and our power play ran at 47%. So we touched the power play the next time, and if it didn't go in, I mean, what's wrong, right? Back to the question, what's wrong? But all of that is really, really good. So you've got a whole group of guys, either guys that have been here their entire time since the team moved back, where there wasn't that expectation, right? They hadn't, and then you've got a really group of young guys that over a year or two have come in, and now they feel they're a pretty good team. I think the expectations in our room were probably higher in some ways than the expectations outside our room. Where the next stage is that is you have that expectations, but you're realistic on exactly how hard you got to work to hit those expectations. That if you go out and, you know, the two lines, we just got to play our game and I just got to play my game. Right? Well, if you just play your game, you're not winning 5-0 straight through the playoffs. And that's hard at times for players to understand, or possibly fans and sometimes coaches too, because I was grumpy as hell after some wins, you know, when you probably look back at it and say, you know what, you probably didn't have to be such an ass the next day because your team played pretty darn well, but you didn't like those 4 plays, so you were grinding. I felt the expectations were raised appropriately in the room. Like I said, there's a lot of that St. Louis series I liked.
Paul, you alluded to sort of the sense in January that the Winnipeg Jets record was terrific, but you saw some things that you didn't necessarily like in the game. And I remember from around that time we were talking about the shape of the forecheck and the backcheck and things like this, and you were saying that defensive video was what you were showing most often.
Yeah.
And then to connect that to, you compared youth and you used the age 20 to 26 range as well. I'm wondering if part of the team defense depends on not just your Laines and Connors and Ehlers, the young guys, but a guy like Mark Scheifele and that full age range of those players to step up that side of their game.
Yeah, I'm almost going to try not to tie the age of a player to that concept. You're right. You know, I was certainly showing defensive-minded video, which is a bit of a challenge when you're scoring, man, and you're winning hockey games, and you're grinding to be a better defensive team. Because these guys want to win, right? And they're competitive guys. And if you're a scorer, and if that's what you do, you push that harder. When, you know, that patience that I think we all get as adults, as you get a little bit older, the patience in your life that you don't, it doesn't have to come every day. It doesn't, you know, you just stay in the fight. That patience in your hockey game is something that is a learned thing, that sometimes you put the puck in deep and line change instead of hanging in for the rest of that shift, and now it's a minute 5 second shift instead of a 45 second shift, and yeah, you cost yourself possibly a chance to score, but you're in a little better defensive positioning because of it over the course of the 60 minutes. So just some learned patience in your game.
I can look at that time of year as well, and to what you were saying about all the goals Winnipeg was scoring. And, geez, if you just prorated Line A's goal scoring at that time or Scheifele's or Wheeler's points at that point, astronomical numbers. But when you talk about that human element and gaining the patience, how, in your role, can you guide them through, hey, you know what, we're scoring all the time, but there's this other thing that we need to add. How do you get there?
So part of our number analysis where you – like we, because of the way our schedule was structured, and some of it's the other teams, we wouldn't have left our time zone a whole lot for about a month and a half, right? And we're playing home games, and we also ran through a run of stretch of teams at that time that were non-playoff teams, I think 10 of 14 in December. So we're rolling through those pretty good. And that doesn't answer your question, but it goes back to the expectations. Those guys' numbers were really good, but not sustainable for anybody in the National Hockey League. You know, like Patty scored 5 one night, right? That doesn't mean he should score 400 if he just plays his game. So those expectations. So you learn it from what happens to your team when you lose 4 one-goal games in a playoff series. That's where you learn it. So you come back, and when you're walking in and you're saying, this is just as important as how many goals you score, there's more belief in that, and you get better.
If you looked maybe, Paul, at the back half of this season when you guys were maybe a little bit more inconsistent than last year,
yeah.
What did you notice? What did you pinpoint the most at maybe compared to last year? I mean, not really what went wrong, but what was different, if anything?
Well, we're a slightly different team. We have a slightly different skill set. What did we play? How many in a row at home did we play in March last year? What was that number? What's that?
8 of 12 at home.
Yeah. So the difference in our last block of schedule from this year last year was Buffalo and Morrissey out of their lineup 3 times on the East Coast, 3 times on the West Coast. So it's not an excuse. It's a factor if we're relating those two ends of seasons, right? We played 10 of our last 11 games. I think we hit 9 non-playoff teams in that run. So that's the different structure. I liked big pieces of our game since March on better than any point of our time prior to that, even though we're not winning the games. The game in Boston's is a right game. Our game in Washington that we lost is one of the best games that we played all year. So there's you lose, so everything feels wrong, but it's not the case. I liked how we entered. Having Josh out and having Dustin out affected that greatly. But we hit then 10 of 13 playoff teams in March, and we're dragging our butts from one end of the country to the other, and we were still competing and grinding, and there was lots of confidence on my part that our game was going to be timed right if we could get her going, if we could get a little healthy, a little fresh in the playoffs. It's a loss, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat it but I don't feel that way about our season. Like, we lost in the first round. That's under what we'd really expected that we would be able to do. But we played a hell of a series against a good team that played a little bit better than we did.
And maybe can you just touch on Kevin Hayes and what he brought in the last couple of months? I mean, obviously unsure if he's going to be back next year.
Right.
But What did you think of his play overall in comparison to what you maybe had expected when you guys got him at the deadline?
No, a pretty good idea of where he was at, like when we got him, this in certain style of play. He's a guy that can make some plays in some traffic, and he's got some hands to do it. He had an adjustment here, style of play-wise. I mean, they play, and it's almost Eastern Conference and Western Conference is as much a Ranger-Jets thing. And then, you know, but we still were looking for that chemistry toward the end. So I ended up going back with things I know had worked at a point in time and, you know, really liked the way Lowry's line played in the playoffs. They had a real dominant game for us in five. Connor Scheif and Wheeler won us some hockey games. So that's how the structure ended out playing. So his minutes got cut down, but I like what he did. I like him as a player.
You probably don't think about do-overs very often, Paul, in this line of work, but if you were thinking back
every
to Game 6,
day.
Maybe a do-over or what you would do different, yeah. So, you know, Game 6, you go with a guy with a broken leg. What makes Nick Ehlers the right guy? And I don't mean that to sound
silly. How else could it sound?
So
Blake's comment to you, and I thought it was kind yesterday, Fraser, you can just slide that one back.
But you made the choice of going with an athlete with a broken leg who tells us now that it was a very difficult thing for him.
Yeah.
What goes into that decision that he was the best guy when you did have a couple other options?
So first of all, there's the spectrum of the broken leg, the compound fracture where the bone is hanging out the leg, and a micro fracture on an MRI or a CT machine. And if I took guys out that did it, you know, we would have a fair number of players playing with that. Dustin Byfuglien, that was his second injury that he dealt with. So what we would do in that case is say, Nicky, do you think you can play? And they freeze those things, and some of them freeze really well. So Brandon Tanev broke the top half of his finger right off to the point they couldn't put it back together until they put a screw in it, and he missed a game. So it's these things these guys play with. So Nicky took warm up after that, and he said, yeah, I'm good, I'm ready to play. Now, I also know with Nicky, he's played with a broken finger before, so he's been through it, and he's played with it. So I probably got two or three guys at that time playing with almost the same thing. So we put them out in warm up, and they skate around the ice, and we watch them real close, and he comes off and says, yeah, I can play. Then he plays. I had two other guys in warm up just in case he didn't. So I got no problems playing Nicky in that. And there's something else to that, too. You build your memory bank of what you can deal with on these kind of situations. You get into the playoffs, there are six guys getting their shoulders needled, their knees needled, their hips, their backs. You got broken bones, cracked ribs. You got all that kind of stuff to play with. And now I got a player who's done it two or three times. So his pain mental in his library of what I can play with is fairly high. We got doctors that'll keep anybody out that shouldn't play. I had no problem putting Nick Ehlers in that game. He wanted to be in that game. It didn't hurt when he was playing. It was going to hurt like hell the next day. And some guys run 2 months of that.
There was nothing but praise from your players in regards to you and the job you do with them.
That was
Blake,
expensive.
Blake.
That's why I met with them before you did.
Blake said he'd go through a brick wall for you. Those relationships that you have with those players, the way that they feel about you, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's not always easy or kind. And I wouldn't say that my relationship with every player over the course of the year, and it changes with different players, is warm and fuzzy by any means. But it would mean more, it means everything, that when you're asking them to do hard things and then they say that. So if I was back in there rubbing backs and kissing babies and was that style of, then you go, hey, yeah, the players like you, but they don't play hard for you. But I'm not always as gentle and warm and fuzzy with the players as I am with you guys every day. And I appreciate the fact that sometimes when you're developing a young team, it's hard and players don't like it. And it's especially difficult for young players that aren't used to that. It's a tough environment sometimes. But let me rephrase that. The Winnipeg Jets and the people of Winnipeg have good men in there, and they're learning. And when they get it all learned, and we get it all right, we
can still lose in the first round. Still have 62 wins and lose in the first round. That's pro sports. I'm disappointed as hell, you know, and it just bothers you so much because you all know the time that we all put into this. And I know you do too because you're here most of the time, but you understand the commitment that you make. It's you put your soul into it and then you lose, man. Like it feels so bad. But we got good men here, and yeah, we're gonna lose some good men probably to make everything fit, and we've got a few ruffled feathers in there. We're gonna have to flatten out here before we get going, and that's a good thing. And then we'll get back at her, and this franchise is getting stronger.
How close do you feel you came to getting the most out of your team this year?
100%. At not enough time. So we got the most out of them for stretches and we played really, really well. But covering that last inch, covering that last little bit of play, still got some work to do.
Just to follow up, do you have any, with 2 days of hindsight, any insights into why game six looked so different than the rest?
Yeah, not particularly. I mean, I do. I've got a theory, and some of them I don't get to share with you. There's no story there. There was no three guys decided they didn't. There's no story. But
You left here. You said the biggest challenge was mental.
100%. 100%. So I'm always careful. I don't like the idea as a coach when you lose of creating excuses, right? Especially when you're in Canada, there's too many smart, sophisticated people that are listening to talk. And at the end of the day, everything I've said today is bullshit because we didn't win. That's just a fact. And that's part of my job. And I get that. But there were two or three challenges that I think affected that extra inch that we needed, that one goal that we needed. And none of them are sinister. They're just that we were, slightly less, a little short in the tank, I thought at times, than that last month, and I think that affected us. But that's a factor. Everybody has their challenges. I mean, you look at list of some of the teams that won, their injury list is significant, right? And that goes back to Charlie Huddy's story about the Islanders and the Oilers getting together for the first time, and the Oilers felt like $1 million, and the Islanders could barely walk, and they kicked their butts, right? So we had our challenges. We didn't get to where we needed to get to. I'm excited about the group. I think we've probably learned a hell of a lot more this year than we learned last year, right? About how hard this thing is and the sacrifices that our group as a pretty gifted offensive group have to make to the overall team winning. And they did it. You look at our shift length in the playoffs, it was better than it was all year long. There were a bunch of those little things that are important tells, and tough ending. Nobody's in a good mood, but we're in pretty good shape.